Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, what's up, Surf Splendor listeners? Always good to be back with you. This is David Scales, of course. And today, bringing you an episode of Surf News, getting you caught up from the last 2 weeks of everything that's happened in the world of surfing and prepping for the Fiji Pro, the men's Fiji Pro. The women took place, so congrats to Sally Fitzgibbon. Really, really remarkable performance by a lot of the ladies, actually. I thought it was kind of a turning point event. But Scott and I will get into that in today's show. And we're kind of in the holding pattern for the men's event. And it's like day three or four of the waiting period. Had nothing but lay days. But looks like swells on tap. Nothing massive, but definitely, definitely contestable. And it should be good, actually. So we have that to look forward to, and we'll break it all down in today's show. Just wanted to say thank you for tuning in. Thank you for rating and reviewing the show in iTunes. We just kind of figured out recently, believe it or not, after 2 years, that you can't, it doesn't appear that you can rate and review the show in your iPhone app, but you can do it on your desktop computer. You just have to log into iTunes, and then you can rate and review it there. So thank you to the listener who figured that one out, and let me know of that issue. And I think that's it. Just follow us on social media at Surf Splendor and continue the conversation there. Give your thoughts about this show and past shows. And then, of course, on SurfSplendorPodcast.com, you can leave comments and check out all of the ancillary content that accompanies this episode. Photos, videos, music, all the playlists from every single episode. Check all that stuff out. All right, enjoy today's show. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. Thanks.
Yeah, guy. Welcome, everybody. Down the line, Surf Talk Radio. Scott Bass, David Scales with you on this Tuesday, June 9th, 2015. And David, I started us off with some Allman Brothers, a band that's near and dear to your heart and to my heart.
It's been way too long since we've heard any Allman Brothers on this show, man.
This is actually the intro song to the show for a number of years when we were on terrestrial radio down in San Diego.
Yeah, awesome.
So that brings back memories.
Yeah, no, I mean, you, for a while there, you were singing their praises every single episode, even when there was no reason to or no connection to the show. But it's like you haven't talked about them in a year. I thought that you guys had a falling out or something.
No, I just finished the Dwayne Allman biography called Sky Dog.
Okay.
Read that. And Greg Allman is going to be at the Del Mar Fairgrounds June 12th, I think, or June 18th, something like that.
Are you going?
You know, I'm thinking about it.
It seems
there's
like
also an Allman Brothers tribute band that's playing in Carlsbad on June 13th.
How about the Rolling Stones playing the Belly Up like a month ago?
Oh my God.
How was that?
That was crazy, dude.
Did you know anybody who went?
Well, I did. And I was going to interview a guy and put it on the back end of this show, this particular episode. But he flew to South Africa. But so my friend, so the Belly Up Tavern is this really cool, small little place in Southern California in Solana Beach. Right there in San Diego County. And it's a very iconic place. It's it's held, you know, there's been great concerts by great performers there for 40 years.
Right.
And it's on Cedros Avenue, which is this industrial complex. But and in fact, it's where Surfing's New Image and Surfports Hawaii used to be, right next to the Belly Up Tavern. Well, now it's grown up into this like uber kind of clicky artsy, you know.
It's an arts district.
Yeah, it's the arts district. So it's really gotten high rent. And but the Belly Up's still there, and it'll be there forever, we hope. But anyway, so the Rolling Stones, after they performed in San Diego at Petco Park, there was, you know, buzz on the street that the Rolling Stones were performing a private concert at the Belly Up Tavern. The Belly Up Tavern holds about 600 people max.
I didn't even think it was that many.
Well, you really only want 450 people there. That's the perfect size, you know, for a band and everything. And in fact, that's how many were there at the Stones concert, 450 people. So it wasn't like jam-packed sardines. But yeah, the Rolling Stones played a private event for a Rancho Santa Fe multimillionaire who, it's my understanding that he was basically just, it was his second wife's birthday. And he just, you know, called the Stones. However, these guys have connections. And he got the Stones to play for $2.5 million.
That's what the price was?
Yeah, $2.5 million.
Oh my gosh.
And they went out there and they did great. So my friend is the IT manager at the Belly Up. And I was Facebooking him. I'm like, and I even saw on Facebook, he's like, I can't even get in and I'm the IT manager, you know?
Okay.
So he didn't even know. But about 5 o'clock that afternoon, he gets a call from the general manager of the Belly Up. And the general manager's like, hey, man, we're having a problem with our IT. We can't get internet. We need you to come in. So he drives over to Solana Beach. He's got to park way far away. There's security everywhere. There's these big, you know, like fifth wheel tour buses. There's like 7 of them behind the Belly Up Tavern. He's got to walk in from three blocks away. He walks through the crowd, gets to the Belly Up. There's like 5 or 6 different levels of security just to get through to see the general manager. He gets through all these 5 levels of security, you know, calling him, going, I'm here. He finally gets to the general manager and he's at the back door of the Belly Up where all the Stones guys are. And the general manager's like, well, it's not really our internet, but it's these guys' internet, the Stones, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, these guys, they're tour buses, they're having problems getting the Wi-Fi and they want to get online. So my guy gets to go into Mick Jagger's fifth wheel trailer and fix Mick Jagger's internet.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And he said that, you know, he saw Keith Richards. He walked past Ronnie Wood. He obviously didn't interact with any of them. But he took about 45 minutes to get their internet up and running, and they were all stoked. And then he was so deep into the security, the general manager was like, you know what? You're here now. You might as well just stay for the show.
Mm.
And so he just said it was mind-bendingly insane, like super good set list. And they played, you know, just with as much energy and fire as any concert you've ever seen them at. And I know Rob Machado was there too. Those are the two. I know a couple of other guys. A friend of mine, Jake Brewer, got to build out the set and some of the lighting stuff. And he got to be like the spotlight guy up in the thing. So he got to see the show working it.
Cool.
And a couple of other friends of mine.
Amazing. Yeah. I just crunched the numbers. 2.5 million. And if there's 450 people, that's $5,555 per ticket.
Yeah, and I heard that it was actually like a $25,000 ticket raising money for some fundraiser on top of that.
I figured he just footed the bill.
I'm not sure how it worked out, you know, because if you really do the numbers on the show on Sunday evening in San Diego at Petco Park, those guys made $300 million. So like $2.5 million, it's kind of like, really, why, you know? But I think a lot of it is, I think they like playing small shows, small venues. It keeps them kind of sharp. And
well, $300 million at Petco, that's prior to expenses, I'm sure.
Yeah,
that's just ticket sales gross.
I don't know what the net is, but, you know.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty rad. Speaking of Allman, not to continue non-surf talk, but...
Dude, the Allman Brothers Stones are connected to surfing in some way.
They're both connected to that documentary Muscle Shoals.
Did you ever see that? I did see that.
Maybe we talked about it on the show.
You turned me on to that. What a great documentary.
Phenomenal documentary. Yeah. It's on Netflix streaming if anybody's interested in just music history. I mean, everybody who's anybody came through Muscle Shoals. And Elvis.
Dwayne Allman was a session guitarist.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, pretty cool stuff. And then you turned me on to that other great documentary that I turned somebody else on, which was it 20 Feet from Stardom?
Yeah.
That's a really cool documentary about backup singers.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Stones stuff in there. And that one Lisa girl, the backup singer.
Yep.
She was on this tour, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Same Lisa girl.
Okay.
Yeah, I forget her last name, but
yeah.
Real famous backup singer for the Stones.
Sweet.
And then the other one that you turned me on to is the Ginger Baker one, right?
Yep.
What's that one called?
Beware of Mr. Baker.
Yeah, Beware of Mr. Baker. That's around. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I've been meaning to get on that.
Yeah, that guy's a nightmare, man. Well, at any rate, I didn't think you took anything I said seriously. I'm glad to hear that you're taking my recommendations.
I have things. I mean, we should just start off with this. I'm going to give you another pat on the back because, you know, what you've been saying about Kelly all along is that he's not really focused. He's got a lot of shit going on in his life. Those things are probably part and parcel as to why he's not performing well on tour. And I'm sure you saw Kelly's interview on the Dawn Patrol. It basically said exactly what you said.
Break it down. I've been saying this for a year, by the way. But what did he say?
He basically, the best part, I think the best quote out of it was, and I'm sort of butchering it a little bit, but he basically said, I perform on tour relative to how I'm feeling off tour. And if I got a lot of stuff going on in my life, you know, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, but I'm occupied or preoccupied, my performance shows it. And again, I'm paraphrasing a lot here, but that's what I got out of some of his quotes was that, you know, my performances reflect how I'm feeling or how I'm doing, you know, whether good or bad.
Yep.
And so I guess the question is, and you might want to break down that interview a little bit more, but the question is Kelly still the favorite? Because with John Florence out, and Kelly's unbelievable track record at Cloudbreak, you got to say, initially, Kelly's the favorite. But you read what, you know, you watched his interview, and then the question is he still the favorite? Does this put more question marks on you, David, as a guy that's really kind of grinding down into where his mental state is? Or is this, I read this as an interview where it's like, you know what, I'm admitting that I've been having some off the field, for lack of a better phrase, issues or just things that are taking me away from my focus. And now I'm telling you that I'm here, I'm sitting here, I've been getting ribbed and jibed about my bad performance, the worst performance that Stardy's ever had on tour, I think.
Yep.
And did this interview, and I think it continues today, by the way. There was two parts to that interview. I only saw part one.
I think there was only part one because that was 2 days ago and then they had Mick Fanning on yesterday.
Oh.
So I don't know if they're having Kelly back again today.
I thought
today.
There was a part two. But anyway, I saw this interview as more like, I'm back, I'm here. If I'm ever going to win, it's going to be now. I'm pretty focused. And maybe he's cleared away some of the business situations that have been preoccupying his mind.
Interesting that you feel that way because I felt like everything you said up until that last sentence is true. Like he admitted and said, I've been getting ribbed from people. He admitted that and he goes, look, I'm just going to come out in the open and say it. Everybody's talking about it on the internet behind my back of like, where's Kelly's headspace at? I'm not ignoring it. Yes, that is all true. But I don't feel like he ever rounded that bend and said, but now I've cleared everything and I'm here and I'm buckling down and I'm coming in hot. He never said that. He just kind of left it at, yeah, my headspace is messed up and I'm not sure why. And this is where I'm at. He didn't say I've got my quiver dialed. I've got things off my plate and now I'm here to compete. He was just like, yeah, dude, my things are all in disarray right now, basically. So I'm saying, I don't think he's going to perform in Fiji. Like I'll lay it down right now and say, I don't think Kelly's going to show up in Fiji.
So did you take him off your team or was he ever on your team?
Well, that's a great fantasy question. I had enough money to buy somebody in the 10 million level and I do have Mick, but it came down to Adriano versus Kelly. And what a dilemma to have, dude. It's like my heart is so with Kelly, but my brain is with Adriano and he's performed well on my team thus far.
Yeah.
He's coming in hot. He's got all the ambition in the world. He's sitting first on the rankings and he got fifth last year. Kelly also got fifth last year. Yeah. So, but Kelly's gotten a lot of wins at Cloudbreak too. So I actually stuck with Adriano. It's a strictly a numbers play for me. Not a passion play. But one of the things is his quiver. Like Strider talked on a morning show, maybe it was that one, maybe it was a previous one, of just like he sees Kelly in the water and he's seen Kelly's quiver on land and he's in the water and he's like, hey, Kelly, is this that Tomo you're riding? And Kelly's like, no. Oh, well, is it the CI with the artwork on it? No. Which board are you riding? Oh, I'm trying out this other one. And then he takes it back to the boat, switches out for a different board. So it's like Kelly isn't fully sure what direction he's even going, you know?
I think Kelly does that a lot, though. I don't know if... And I think Kelly's good enough that it does. He can ride any board. He's so sensitive to his boards that I think he can adjust and find the favorite one. And he's just doing that now because he doesn't have a jersey on. And when he, yeah. I think he's got a favorite board. Like he's got a board where he looks at, he goes, you know what? That's Old Faithful. I'm going there.
See, I think that's always been what he does. I don't think he has that board right now.
Maybe, but I will say this. You mentioned that he, you know, he didn't come out and say, I'm on fire, I'm ready to go, I'm going to win this event. Well, Kelly would never do that. In my opinion, Kelly was always going to hold his cards close to his vest. He wouldn't say that. In fact, he would say the opposite. You know, he's playing, he does
play
strategic, yeah, mental sort of gymnastics with the other competitors. I do have some quotes regarding what he said here. He said, when I'm really relaxed doing the right things in my life, everything's coming together in the right way and my results follow. For me, I don't know exactly what it is yet. It will click at some point, I think. Maybe I can scare a couple of guys again. So I read into that like, I'm not going to spill my cards and say I'm fired up and ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm just going to like put a little question mark in some guys' heads. And I'm always ready to go at Cloudbreak. When is he not ready to go at Cloudbreak? You know?
Well, that's really funny. I your argument makes perfect sense. I guess I'm digging deep, like reading kind of between the lines and just seeing that he doesn't have the confidence that he's had in the past. In the past, he'd say those exact same words, but there was this underlying confidence that I could see where he knew he was going to smash guys. Right now, that underlying thing that I see is a lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he can surf like Felipe surfs in small waves. I don't think he can surf like, geez, like Owen Wright or Gabriel Medina even can surf at medium-sized Cloudbreak. I think if it's 10-foot plus Cloudbreak, Kelly's probably the guy to beat out there, I think, for sure. But the way that Cloudbreak was last year, where it was like slightly under head high, nobody could beat Gabriel. Gabriel looked unbeatable. And they said this year in the free surfs, they're like, Gabriel was unstoppable out there the last couple of days. And especially trickier waves like restaurants. Dude, I don't know. Kelly's back's against the wall, man. Unless all cylinders are firing, I don't see him pulling it together.
He did say this, too, to further quote Kelly Slater. He said, it's either going to click for me here or I'm going to get tired of losing and either quit or win. I've always connected my surfing to my results. Again, that's sort of, and right. I'll end the quote there. That's what we were talking about. But I'll just the overall vibe from Kelly during that interview was just completely relaxed. It was completely like, I don't really care.
I agree.
And I'm okay with that. And I know that, you know, you and I have kind of gone back and forth on this, but I like Kelly when he's kind of like, I don't care. Cause there's that moment. And I think it was at Cloudbreak or maybe it was Chopu. It was at Chopu in like 05 or 06 when he was comboed by Bruce. It was that, what did he call it? It's called, you know, the giving up moment, or there's some phrase that he used.
Okay, I don't
know.
Where
anyway, he was comboed by Bruce at Chopu. Bruce had like a 9 and a 9.8. And Kelly was like, I'm comboed. I have to get 2 10s. There's nothing I can do here but just surf and have fun. I'm over it. Or he used some term and it's slipping me now, but it was like the I'm over it moment. Or I'm just going to. Letting go is the term. That was what
they
letting go.
They made a movie called Letting Go.
Yeah, Letting Go.
Yeah.
So letting go, he just goes, I'm letting go. And he got 2 10s in that heat. Comboed, he got 2 10s. That was the one where he did that layback, crazy layback, fallback thing.
Yeah. Free fall into a layback, no hand barrel, pumping through the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So 2 10s and he beats Bruce, you know, and he's comboed, you know, with 5 minutes left or whatever.
Right.
He got 2 10s
right.
back to back. And so it's that letting go of sense that I have, that I sense that he has now, where he's just like, you know what? I'm over it. What, you know, maybe over it's not the right phrase, but I'm just letting go. And he looked like he was, but you know, it's hard to say with Kelly. He always looks relaxed. And
well, I think you're right. His best performances come when he's fully relaxed.
All of ours, right? All of our.
For sure. But I also think that in the past he cared and now he doesn't. And that's the difference for me.
Okay.
Is that you still have to care. You have to have the inner fire. Now, here's the
he's
other.
Anchoring my team.
Here's the other thing about this whole scenario is, it's not like there's an Andy Irons figure in the mix. There's eight of them. You know, it's not like one guy's that he can focus his attention on and just and put that guy in his sights and take him down. There's Gabriel winning this event last year and current world champ. Felipe's got everything to prove in the South Pacific. Mick Fanning, by the way, I think Mick's going to win this event, potentially. Mick could win the world title this year. Mick is looking so... His surfing has never looked better. Nobody's really focusing on him.
Exactly. Well, you nailed it right there. That's the thing about Mick is he plays... He's so good at just being in the back seat, in the driver's seat, and just kind of just like... No one ever really puts their energy into him. You know, it's either Brazilian Storm or Kelly or, you know, it's just never about Mick. And then all of a sudden you come into Hawaii and you're like, all Mick's got to do is get a fifth at pie or even last, you know, and he went and you're like, oh, it's a done deal. You know?
Yeah. So I'm really looking for Mick. And then you got Adriano who looks, I mean, he wants to win more than anybody. So I think Owen Wright could be a dark horse in this event. He looks incredible.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw on the morning show yesterday, they showed this little cartoon illustration from a guy who does a lot of them for Trax Magazine. And it was basically, it's like a one panel comic strip type thing. But it shows the Brazilian Storm and all these Brazilians off, you know, in this kind of area. And then Mick Fanning in the foreground looking at it. And some guy's talking to Mick and he's like, whoa, watch out. How are you going to weather that Brazilian Storm? And Mick's quote is just like, psh, looks like steady seas to me, mate. You know, where it's like everybody's talking about the Brazilian Storm. But Mick, it's just like, nope, I've been through this a million times before. I'm just going to go out there and surf like I surf and not worry about any of it. And just take guys out. And that's what Mick does.
Yeah, I would agree. Mick's dangerous, not only in this event, but throughout the world tour here this year. So you're on to that. I agree with that.
So my point is that Kelly, no matter what Kelly thinks he wants to do, there's too many other guys with their own game plan at this point. Mick, I mean, I don't know.
Look, how great would it be for the world tour if Kelly Slater wins this event, though?
I would love it.
I'm not saying I'm a conspiracy theorist. I don't think Kelly needs any pushing at all. But if he gets on his game and wins this event, all of a sudden, this is like the craziest year in a long time.
It really is.
You know, because we just don't have a steady front runner, do we?
No.
How far ahead is Adriano?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
So the other big story with this Fiji Pro is all the injuries going into the event. Sippo, Jordy Smith, John Florence, Michelle Perez. They're replaced by Jay Davies, Aritz Aramburu, Alejo Muniz, and Aka Ravulo, plus the two wild cards, which are Dane Reynolds and another local local trialist. So one of the arguments that it was kind of a little argument that Strider and Martin Potter got into on the morning show was just, is going kind of all out in your free surfs harmful or beneficial to your competitive career? And Potter's stance was like, look, these guys need to tone it back in their free surf so they're 100% for their contest surfing. Strider's like, F that. They need to sort out everything they can sort out in their free surfs so that they're fully primed. You know, how do you know if you can land the biggest alley-oop of your life if you didn't do it 2 weeks ago free surfing? You're not going to try to do it in your contest. I thought it was a pretty interesting debate. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I did see the headline on that video. I didn't watch the video. I would have liked to have seen it. I see both sides of it, quite frankly. But I think when you're on site at Cloudbreak, I tended to favor what Martin Potter's saying. It's a pretty dangerous situation out there. You should have already nailed down these 360 alley-oops or whatever crazy errors you're going to be doing. You should already have these in your repertoire prior to going out there. And,
which is Strider's point, is you have to go practice this stuff in the off weeks.
Yeah, maybe, but not at Cloudbreak or not at restaurants where there's a lot more to deal with as far as the shallow water and stuff like that. And well, if we're talking injuries, to be on site and to injure yourself in a warm-up is you know...
Which none of these guys did.
It is. These injuries happened earlier.
Right. Michelle Perez, for example, was in Tahiti surfing a maxed out swell, had a horrific wipeout and broke his hand. Now he can't go to Cloudbreak. So when that swell's coming and you have an off week, do you go to Tahiti and chase those waves at the risk of, you know, injuring yourself?
I just think you do.
I think you do too.
You can't be holding back because then you're playing... It's just... You know, you're sort of, your mindset's in a place where, oh my God, I might get hurt.
Right.
Or, oh my, you know, you're just not in a positive, I'm going, I'm charging, whatever happens, happens. you know, but there's also a fine line there, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you're expected to be on the world tour and to contend for a world championship, you have responsibilities and some accountability, not only to yourself, but to the people around you to be right.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's more about headspace than it is about performance. And if you're constantly in the 80% headspace, then you're just going to be filling in the back half of the tour. You know what I mean? It's like you're going to be in the 20th spot for 5 or 6 years. And who gives a crap? Who wants to have that career? I mean, yeah, obviously it's a great lifestyle, but I'm just saying what you really want to do in life, find something you're good at and give it 110%, you know? And I think that's if you look at the guys who got injured, Jordy Smith, he is that guy. He gives it 110%. Maybe his contest results don't show it, but he's a flamboyant surfer. John Florence, you know, Michelle Perez, certainly.
How did Jordy and John get hurt?
I think Jordy was a knee injury and John was a high ankle injury from trying to land in air.
And Jordy was trying to land in air too?
I don't recall what Jordy's was exactly, but I'm pretty sure it was a knee.
Yeah.
And then they're going to fully recover and be back probably for the next event. And then Sippo is a back injury that I know he's been dealing with for years, actually.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it certainly is interesting that the guys that are taking these surfers' place, these new wild cards. You know, you mentioned Jay Davies. I wanted to ask you about Jay Davies. Is he somebody that you put on your team? My question is, how many times has he surfed Cloudbreak? This is a tough wave to surf. It's not a simple wave. It's they make it look easy, but it's a very difficult wave, especially backside. It's sort of a top tube. You know, there are moments when it goes real wide, but it's sort of a pinching top tube, and it's difficult. You have to pump inside of that narrow little moment, too.
Right.
You have to drive your board through it. You just can't set your line up there and hope for the best in most situations.
Well, as much as I love Jay Davies, and I was singing his praises prior to the Margaret River event, I don't really think he's going to perform at Cloudbreak. I don't think you can really make the quarterfinals twice as a wild card. He had his one big shot, and that was at his home break. Not only have I never seen him surf Cloudbreak, I've never really seen him go left. You know, like, I know there's some lefts in West Oz for sure that are gnarly, but all the footage we've seen of him are at North Point. Yeah. The footage we've seen of him is at North Point, the right at Margaret, and the box. So I'm a little apprehensive, but I did put him on my team because it was between, with the amount of money I had, it was between him and Glenn Hall, which I actually had first. I think Glenn could do okay, but it was like, you know what?
Well, this is one of those waves where the time spent in the water is crucial.
Yeah.
And so you might kind of opt for the Glenn Halls of the world or anybody that's a veteran that's put in a lot of time out at that wave and restaurants for that matter. It's valuable. You know, guys like Freddie P.
Right.
Like guys like that, Ace Buck and Kai Otten, Owen Wright, guys that are, any guys like Matt Banning or who are some other rookies?
Ricardo Christie, Keanu Asing.
Yeah. Those guys stay way far away from those guys. Yeah. Italo, Farrar, right?
Right.
Is that how you say it? Any rookies, any guys that have only been on tour for a year, stay away from them.
Right.
This is one of those waves. You know, it's funny because Chopu's not one of those. Chopu's a wave where all you got to do is go over the ledge and everyone gets the same ride, basically, you know. But Cloudbreak throws a lot more lumps, a lot more movement. There's this west bowl that comes in. If you catch that one and you don't make that section, you're through. You're going to get worked.
There's more definitely water experience or Cloudbreak experience comes into play there, but also just more surfing on the wave. Like you have to negotiate and navigate and figure out your line and adjust your line. And
as you mentioned, boards are important.
Hugely.
Really important.
Hugely.
Which, speaking of which, you know, I guess we should give a shout out to Sally Fitzgibbons for an incredible performance out there with a busted eardrum. And she was really charging, and she always charges. You know, she's a little fireball, Tasmanian devil. She's a small little girl. I don't know if you've met her before.
No.
She's a small person. You know, like she's not especially compared to like Bianca Buttendog.
Right.
Who sounds like a female evil cartoon character or something.
Yeah, like the enemy in a movie or something.
Yeah.
So I agree. I watched the women's event and I was really really surprised and impressed by their surfing. Last year, they really underperformed, I think, and kind of dodged a lot of barrels and were kind of going out to the shoulder and trying to do turns and stuff. It was a maybe it was like equally heavy. There was a few rounds that there were heavy waves in this year, but I thought everybody really stepped it up. Nobody got like a super gnarly barrel, but there were a couple barrels. But more importantly, they were like throwing these massive turns right under the hook, like free fall dropping, knifing a bottom turn, going right back into it, like comboing the crap out of it. And there was a lot of girls. I thought Laura Enever looked phenomenal. Bianca Batendog, as you talked about, she made the final. She looked really, really comfortable out there. And then Sally busted her eardrum in an early round, and the doctors advised her to not surf her next heat, but she did. She just wrapped the thing up, went out there, and got two nines. And she was getting nines almost in every single heat. So I thought pretty heroic performance on Sally's part. Did you notice, I don't know, did you watch the event or just the highlights? Or
I watched the semis. I watched some of it, you know. I watched the finals.
They didn't have any commercials through the event.
Oh, I didn't notice
which
that.
I thought was really weird. They would go to commercial break, and then they would just have like a placeholder, you know, that said Fiji Pro commercial break or something. We'll be back soon. And they would run it. And normally they run 3 30-second commercials. They basically ran that three times. So it would run on a loop with like a wave in the background, and then it would end, and then they'd run it again for 30 seconds, and then they'd run it again for 30 seconds and come back. So I thought, like, did they just not have sponsor dollars for this event for the women?
Apparently not.
Yeah.
If they did, they would have taken care of their sponsor. So
weird.
Yeah, weird might not be the right word.
Food for thought, like on what direction.
From a fan's perspective, it's, you know, a little scary, right?
Totally. Because, I mean, you would think, I mean, we've talked about on the show, like the women's event, arguably, women's surfing is more marketable than men's surfing, you know? So kind of strange.
Yeah, that's too bad. Hopefully their sales team will get it going and they'll get up to speed. But
in the fantasy surfer realm for the women, I'm number one overall in the clubhouse.
Women's surf team ratings?
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to give us right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh my God.
You wish that you were involved.
No, I do not.
Not savvy enough to play this game.
Oh, God, there's eight competitors or whatever.
No, actually there's 19,000 the whole club, in the whole fantasysurfer.com thing.
No, but I mean, how many girls are on the tour? Like 12 or something?
No, come on.
I don't know.
Well, I'm number one in the clubhouse, of which we have 242 members, but there's 19,000 total people playing, and I'm 29th overall. I'm super proud.
You should see David's eyeballs lighting up like you just won the lottery or something.
I'm going for first.
God, well, I would expect nothing less.
But I didn't actually win this event. Oliver S. won this event with a whopping 930 points. So
Oliver S.
Oliver S.
You should be proud of yourself.
Yes.
There is a big swell expected Friday through the weekend at Cloudbreak. And then another one that they're tracking that they think could be as big. So this is a good sign that we'll have a lot of swell at Cloudbreak and hopefully the right winds for there. Did you see the pictures on Instagram? I think it's Road Soda.
It's Surfing Magazine.
Is that Surfing Magazine?
Yeah, they have two accounts, but that's one of them.
And they're just partying like animals. Like there's video of Dane Reynolds doing shots, like some sort of, you know, there's like the Tavaru or Namotu Island drink. I don't know what it's called, a big fufu or whatever. But anyway, they've got diving masks and a diving snorkel, and they're pouring this drink and they're getting just slobber drunk.
It's like a beer bong.
Yeah, it's kind a of beer thing. Bong thing yeah. on Namotu. And they show Adriano and Dane Reynolds and a whole crew of guys getting hammered. is that something that professional athletes do? Like when you go to the French Open, do you think like Djokovic is like hanging out? Like
I don't. No, like, they don't. But
is this okay? I mean,
it's okay by me.
It's okay by you?
Yeah, it is. I don't think Dane's going to win the event.
No, but I mean, professional surfing athletes. Like,
right?
Do you think that this is like? I know that. Look, as surfers, God knows we've all done these things.
Yeah,
but I'm talking about professional athletes.
I get
professional surfers. Like, is Is this what like IndyCar drivers do?
Right.
Like, I think jockeys might do that. I think I've heard that jockeys get together and have ragers.
Here's the deal. I'm not offended if they do it.
I'm not offended. I'm asking you, is it something that professional surfing should, if you were their handlers, if you were managers of these guys, would you be like,
yeah,
you know what? Maybe the spawn, maybe, you know, is this something you want to put out in the public sphere?
Here's my answer to that question is, what do you want to do with your career? If you're Mick Fanning, you're definitely not doing that. Because
he was pouring it.
Exactly, because he's competing against Dane in round one.
Yeah, but
that's his objective is to get Dane wasted.
You're in the mix. Like, yeah, but I assume that everybody there was doing it.
Yeah, oh, I assume that Mick isn't. And I assume Kelly isn't. And I don't think
Kelly wasn't in the picture.
Okay, but my point
Kelly
is...
Kelly, you know, isn't doing it.
My point is, yeah, that's Dane's career path. That's Matt Wilkinson's career path. ADS, and that's what they're going to do.
Adriano was doing it. His first ever, they said.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dang. I might have to swap him out of my team.
Adriano was doing...
These are things
I don't think it's going to linger for a hangover into like when they run the event on Thursday or whatever. But my point is,
yeah,
much the hangover, but just the vibe, just the message that you're sending, I guess.
I think it's okay. Honestly, I think it's okay.
Why?
Why
is it okay for professional athletes to show themselves getting drunk?
Because they are getting drunk.
And
I'm answering your question.
Yeah, but in the public sphere.
I'm answering your question. I think it's okay. It is their lifestyle. There's no point in trying to live a double life and to try to be like, oh no, we're perfectly sober human beings and we don't participate in any of that. And then, look, it's not like they're posting.
I'm not saying that they don't behave in that manner.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we don't assume that even Tony Romo or Brady gets drunk. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you don't see those guys putting it into the public sphere.
Dude, you're out on a tropical island. You're allowed to have a tropical drink out of a snorkel. It's not like he's snorting.
No.
I do understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is that falls within the realm of acceptable behavior. You're on a tropical vacation drinking a
foo-foo
cocktail.
You're competing in a surfing
contest.
Not
doing a rail off a hooker's butt. Like, that's different. You know what I mean? Like, that would be in the realm of...
It sounds like something you've done before. said that like you've been there.
That would be in the realm of unacceptable behavior. This is just joking around, having a fine time. Like, I'm not bothered by it at all.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying if you're the handlers of these people, is this the way that professional surfing wants to be portrayed?
For Dane Reynolds, that's part of his thing. For Wilco,
Adriano,
that's part of his thing. Adriano, I don't think it's necessarily the best decision. Like, that's something we could discuss. Mick Fanning, probably not, but... I think I think it's fine. I don't think you can control image that much. Or I don't think you want to control image that much. And this is an image that, again, it's not that bad. That's acceptable behavior on Fiji, on lay days, when the swell's not coming for a number of days.
I'm not saying the behavior's not acceptable. I'm saying putting it out into the public sphere, I'm not so sure about.
Yeah. Well, that's your
opinion. You're already taking guys off your team based on what I told you.
Well, actually, that's what this fantasy thing has come down to, is like, I'm tracking their behavior on Twitter. Like, what did he eat for lunch? Is that going to weigh him down tomorrow morning? Like, how late did he stay up? Did he stub his toe when he got up in the morning? Like, that all matters, dude.
Can somebody tell me if he's going around looking for wax?
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Exactly. Seabass showed up. Seabass showed up with no fins. I know that much.
Oh my God. That's a bad sign. That's why you shouldn't be putting out the...
And
so if he shows up with no fins and you see him drinking, you take him off of your team.
Plus, he brought his girlfriend.
Oh my God.
Sign of weakness.
Sign of weakness.
That's a sign of weakness.
By the way, I heard that Tavarua Island is so absolutely packed, jam, crowded with people, as well as Nomotu, that it's just like... It's at a busting point. Like, it's just uncomfortably crowded. And so somebody on the Surfer Mag message board brought up a good point. What if it was like they got stranded on Tavarua, like Gilligan's Island? Like, who would play the skipper? Who would be Gilligan? Who would be the skipper of the whole WSL scene? Who would be the
skipper? Kieran Perreault, I guess?
I was thinking Martin Potter.
Ooh.
Might be the skipper.
Ooh.
I could see him.
It would become a battle royale probably between Potts and KP.
And who's Gilligan? The sort of dumb, like, you know, happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. That's a good... Who is it? You've thought about this. Give it to me.
It's probably Joe. Right?
Joe Turpel.
It's probably Joe. Turpel, by the way. But when you think about Gilligan, who's the other option for Gilligan?
Maybe like
it's hard to pick
Seabass surfer wise. Yeah, maybe. Or maybe Wilco surfer wise.
We know the broadcaster's personalities better than we know the surfers.
Kind of.
You probably don't, but I do. You're probably tapped into all of them. But
yeah.
Who's a Gilligan? Who's sort of a happy-go-lucky, goofy, kind of like maybe it is Seabass.
Seabass, maybe Felipe even seems kind of
that way. He's pretty focused. But.
Yeah, but here's my question.
You know, Filippo's the professor.
Who is?
Philippe Toledo's the professor.
Is he? Here's my question with Gilligan's Island is, like they have, you know, wardrobes of clothing, especially, you know, Thurston Howell III and stuff. He had a trunk full of clothing.
Yeah.
They were going on a three-hour tour. Why do you bring a trunk of clothing on a three-hour tour?
You need your cocktail dress, your evening gown, your evening coat, your, you know, when you're like multi-mega, you've got an ascot for every hour.
I guess so.
By the way, who would be Ginger and who would be Marianne of the whole WSLC?
Ooh, good question.
Who's your Ginger? Who's your Marianne?
The Ginge?
The super hot Hollywood starlet Ginger.
The Ginge. Gotta be Laura Enover.
I think you're right.
Laura or Malia Manuel?
Really? Does she put off that Hollywood bling thing?
Not the Hollywood bling thing, but she is glamorous for
sure.
Maybe
it's Coco Ho. She's always blinging.
Coco could do it. I think.
Who's your Marianne?
Marianne.
Sally Fitzgibbons.
Sally or Carissa, maybe. Carissa's the girl next door.
Yeah.
But she's lovely.
I think Sally Fitzgibbons.
Yeah. Send us your tweets. You tell us.
There is a big swell coming, and we're excited about it. So that's probably going to kick off on Thursday. North America time.
Okay, sweet.
I think. Which would be Friday morning there.
You want
right? Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. You want to talk about the smallest swell ever instead of the biggest swell?
Sure.
Enland Texas Wave Park coming to Austin.
I did see that. Okay. A wave park coming to Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
And is that one of the Wave Garden ones?
Yes. The engineers from the Wave Garden in Spain are the engineers for this project. I'm going to give you the bullet points.
Okay.
Austin, Texas, it's going to be 9 football fields large. There's 10 unique waves to choose from, including like everything from 1 foot to 6 foot, including perfect barreling waves that you could select. The length of ride is about 35 seconds each time. There's 300 waves per hour. They're using recycled, reclaimed water. The thing opens in 2016.
Radical.
Radical.
How big are the waves?
You pick your size from 1 to 6 feet, and you can get perfect 6 foot barrels for 35 seconds.
And it's a wave garden. It's one of the flow. It's got basically a trough. It pulls something underwater that creates a wave.
Exactly.
These waves are interesting. They're called pull waves,
mm-hmm.
because all of the energy is right there at that moment where it's breaking. If you go out onto the shoulder, unlike a wave in the ocean, when you go out on the shoulder of a wave in the ocean, there's tons of energy on that. If you go out into the shoulder of one of these pull waves, the energy's done. You just sink. So you have to be in that
pocket.
Zone right there. You can't go, oh, I got 10 speed. I'm going to run out for a huge roundhouse. Or you just fall in the water.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Probably need different boards too, I would imagine. Or, I mean...
Well, there's fresh water, so they're not quite as floaty, right?
Like, I mean, you don't need it, but I bet new boards will be developed for sure. So, interesting.
Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting just from a business standpoint. Like, they'll create, you know, all retail around it and shopping and hotels and all that sort of thing, probably. It'll be like an amusement park.
Austin's
you know?
A big college town. I think Texas, University of Texas is there, right?
I'm not sure.
And... I was reading this morning that Snowdania, the one in the United Kingdom in Britain.
Okay.
The Wave Garden wave machines it opens there this year,
mm-hmm.
2015. And they were talking all about it. They were actually kind of, I guess, relinquishing or giving out some of the information of the technology behind it, which I just gave you. It's
right.
going to be basically 300 meters, which is about 100 yards, right? More or less.
300 feet would be 100 yards. I don't know about meters.
Yeah.
This is America, Scott. We don't
I know. Thank God we have the standard system.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's LinkedInJobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
But anyway, I think it's about a football field long. So think of like, you know,
sure,
a Coliseum or San Diego Stadium or whatever.
Sure.
And there's a pull track right down the middle. So a wave goes left, a wave goes right all at the same time. And it's one of these pull, underwater pulls, a pull wave. And they were saying 1 meter waves, which is a 3 foot wave, and different size, different form and shape and stuff like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And they were saying one wave every minute.
Okay. Yeah, this one says 300 waves per hour. So it'd be more than that, but
yeah,
I got an interesting topic kind of related to that. I interviewed, Randy Rarick, for the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about that standing wave in Germany. And then I got an email from somebody about that afterwards. And then one of our listeners, Henning, is, from Germany. He's emailed quite a bit, and I've seen him at the boardroom show and stuff. And he talked about his experience as well. And what it is just like, there's now this kind of new crop of people who are learning how to surf outside of the ocean. And then they go and try to translate that water. Randy was talking about, they have tourists in Hawaii who come to surf in Hawaii, who learned how to surf outside of the ocean. They'll get up on a wave and they can actually surf, but they have almost no etiquette in the water and no ocean knowledge. So you'll see these guys paddling and positioning, and they just look like complete kooks. Like, you can assess that quickly being a surfer, like, all right, this guy's not a threat in the lineup at all. But then once he's on a wave, you see him do a turn and you're like, whoa, I underestimated that guy. He actually knows how to surf. And as Randy told me that, I realized, like, I've experienced that, especially in Huntington Beach surfing the pier. I never knew what it was. I just thought, like, I was calibrated a little bit off, and like, I need to reassess how I judge people. But what it is exactly that, you know. It's like, this guy looks like such a barn and like his first time in the water, but how come he's surfing better than I am, essentially, you know? And not really, but like, like, I didn't give that guy enough credit. But yeah, that's something that we're going to run into. People are going to get ran over. People are going to not know how to duck dive when you're going down the line. It's just kind of an interesting development in surf culture that we never had to address before.
Well, that's a great segue to this next piece, which is swabbing surfers' rectums for science.
Oh, no.
Yes. Scientists are launching an investigation into antibiotic-resistant bacteria, superbugs, by gathering data from surfers' rectums. This story comes from the United Kingdom. Beach Bums is the first UK project of its kind, teaming researchers with the action group Surfers Against Sewage. Surfers are being asked to voluntarily provide rectal swabs to help scientists find out the effects of marine pollution on human health. David, are you going to sign up for this? Are you just going to voluntarily provide rectum swabs to Surfers Against Sewage?
I am not. I'm usually
anybody, for God's sakes. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm a late adapter regardless of what the project is. So I'll be last in line for that one, especially.
I just can't believe this is actually a legit story, but it is. In fact, the guy from Surfers Against Sewage, here's his quote. He says, "We've been laughing about swab parties going on around the country, but this is set against the background of a really important project." So they're kind of buying into it, but I just can't imagine how. I mean, there's no upside. Like, you just want to help society, right, in general by like just providing a swab or like
well, maybe with enough of the Nemotu scuba beer bong thing, I could be talked into it, but I'll need at least three of those. So here's my question to you is, why can't they just swab your arm or your mouth, or are they?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. I'm not sure. It says the swabs will give researchers an insight into the microbes which colonize in surfers' guts. So this is as close to getting into that area as you can get.
I'd rather do a surgery where you open my gut and go in that way.
By the way, Surfers Against Sewage is asking for 300 surfers around the country to get involved, and the results are expected to be released in 2016. So 300 UK surfers are going to, they're hoping.
Funny.
They're hoping.
Well, yeah. Tweet us if you participated in that study.
Don't,
let us know how it goes.
I don't know about
it. Scott wants photos.
Oh, Lordy.
Did you follow the ISA thing at all?
A little bit.
Do you care at all?
I really, there's so much ISA news that comes out that I just feel like I'm swimming in a stew of ISA information, and it's just too much to take in.
So the ISA, it's like this international, you know,
it's the International Surfing Association is what it is, right?
Yeah, and where it's country.
President is a good friend of mine, Fernando Aguirre, and I'm a huge fan of Fernando.
Sure.
He's a great guy, full of energy. If there was more Fernandos in the world would be a better place. And the ISA is a cool thing, and I have friends that surf in it. You know, it's the governing body that's really trying to, without it, there's no chance of surfing getting in the Olympics. And that's their big push, is to get as many countries as possible signed up as member bodies of the ISA. And then be able to go to the International Olympic Committee and go, hey, look, we've got every country in the world that has a stake in this. Let's get surfing in the Olympics.
Right.
I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. It's basically country against country. And then there's individual winners as well.
This was the junior event, right?
No, this was the world thing.
The world.
Like everybody. Yeah. It was at Popoyo in Nicaragua. Costa Rica won the gold medal. And then in the men's division, Noe Mar McGonigal, which is a Costa Rican surfer, he won that. And that's a name that we need to pay attention to. Scott's rolling his eyes for the record.
Is that like Carlos Muniz?
Well, he was on the team as well. You're welcome.
I thought he was on the world tour. What happened to that guy?
Dude, you do not pay attention to anything on this show.
I just every little thing.
He will be on the world tour. But I'm a big fan of Carlos, of course, so I'm glad that he was part of the winning team. But this kid, Noe Mar, I've spent a week with in Huntington a while back with Quicksilver.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he really is a contender. Yeah. Like, he's going to be on the tour in the next year or two. He's legit.
Yeah.
And so Noe won the men's division. Tia Blanco from the U.S. won the women's division, so that's notable.
It's Blanca or Blanco? Tia Blanco.
Blanco. Yeah. I was confused, too. Or is it Bianca?
Like, no, it's Tia.
No, I know, but Tia Bianco or Blanco. Like, I was confused, but I'm pretty sure it's
Blanco. I saw pictures of Damian Hobgood, who I think coached the team.
No, he was on the team.
Oh, he was
Simmons,
on
the team. Ryan Simmons.
Oh, there was Ryan and Damian that were carrying Tia up the beach. That's the
right.
Picture,
yeah, Ryan's the coach, and then Damian's on the team.
Ryan's a great
Curran.
Guy, by the way.
Oh,
big
awesome.
Fan of his.
Yeah, me too. So, Nathaniel Curran, Damian Hobgood, Ian Crane, and I'm forgetting a fourth person that's on the U.S. team. But on the men's side, anyways.
Geiselman?
No, I don't think. Maybe. Yeah, maybe
know.
Evan.
I'm just trying to think.
I can't remember. But anyways, like these are kind of A-list, maybe B-list U.S. surfers. And they're
Damian's
coming in,
an A-lister.
And they're coming in third place. They got the bronze. Barely got the bronze.
Well, that's because there's bodyboarding, isn't there? Like, it's not just the shortboarders. There's longboarders. There's bodyboarders. And there might even be something else that adds to your team total. I've had PT in here, and we've argued at length that we need to get rid of the bodyboard division for the United States to ever win a gold medal. Now, I could be wrong because I don't follow the ISA competition that well, but I'm under the impression that you have to have a bodyboard team, a shortboard women's, shortboard men's, and that might be just those three. Maybe there's longboard as well. I don't know.
So that's my problem with the ISA is I really care, and I was checking in every day trying to figure out what's happening and who's doing what, and I couldn't figure out the structure of it.
There's so much information that comes out of there that I'm just like, what? Which event is this again? Like, there's an event every week, it seems like.
I literally spent 5 to 10 minutes every day that they were doing this thing on their site trying to figure it out, and just gave up every day. Like, I was like, this is too confusing for me. And Then if you lose, there's like a repercharge round that you can get back in. But then there's like five repercharge rounds between the beginning and the end. So it's like you can lose five times and still win the event. Like I was not into it at all. But my point is that there's incredible surfers around the world whose names we don't know from countries like Peru that are smoking our U.S. surfers who are making six figures, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something worth commenting on anyway.
I'd like to get, it'd be fun to have Ryan in here and both of us rap with Ryan a little bit. He's a good interview.
Yeah, Ryan's solid.
I will say that my friend, my dear friend, Craig Schieber, Tequila Schieber is a member of the Costa Rican team on the Masters side of it. I know the Masters weren't even involved in this particular event.
No.
That's my thing with the ISA. There's so many friggin' events. There's like,
yeah,
there's Masters, there's World Juniors, there's the World Team, there's SUP and Longboard. I think there's also challenged athletes to, it's just like overwhelming information.
Yeah,
and
it is.
And I think they have to be kind of all encompassing so that all of these new nations can be a part of it and take a part. And I think that's why there's so many repercharges, is because they don't want a brand new team to the ISA, a brand new country, I should say, to the ISA, coming to Nicaragua, losing their first heat and going home. They want all these surfers to get as much, so they're like, you're in another heat. Don't worry. You're in another, I know you lost, but you're in another heat. And so they give these guys like six heats to get six plays.
Right. Well, what do you have to do to earn the nickname Tequila, by the way?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Because that's pretty solid.
He's a great guy, a great surfer, very competitive surfer. And I didn't give him the nickname. He actually got the nickname when he moved to Costa Rica about, I don't know, 20 years ago.
I have a feeling there's probably a lot of people contending for that nickname. So if you're the one who wins it, you got to be pretty legit.
That's a good point.
You got to be pretty solid.
It might have to do with snorting tequila or something.
Ooh.
Hot sauce.
Off a hooker's, might involve off hot hooker's sauce. Bus.
So, it might involve a triple jump start of some sort. I don't know.
I got a topic for you.
Yeah.
It falls under the category of just photo licensing issues. Mm-hmm. On BeachGrit, they've done a couple stories of like professional photographers who get into an online beef, basically. A while back, it was Mike Balzer versus Steve Sherman. Did you see that?
No.
Steve Sherman posted a photo of a cover shot of one of Taylor, or I think it was the back cover of Taylor Steele's Focus, which had like all the crew back then, Kelly and whomever.
Yeah.
And said, like, wrote this little story about like, yeah, back when Taylor Steele hired me in 1992 to shoot this photo, blah, blah, blah. Well, Mike Balzer commented on Instagram calling him out, like, I was the one who shot that photo. Your memory's awful. You're always stealing people's photos. And like, they got in this online skirmish.
Ooh.
So Beach Grit covered it. And more recently, they covered a brand new one, which was John Steele versus Grant Ellis. And basically, it's...
No way. Those two guys?
Well, basically, the first one was Balzer calling out Sherm. Sherm didn't really have... He wasn't engaged. He kind of engaged, but it was Balzer calling out Sherm. This one is John Steele calling out Grant Ellis. And basically, John Steele posted a photo of his finger flipping off the latest issue of Surfer magazine. And in the caption, he said, F Grant Ellis and his ego-fueled photo editor dictatorship. For the past 15 years, I've been working to get Texas Surfing into the magazine, only to have him shoot the article himself and take money and work away from me. Congrats on being the crappiest photo editor ever. Take my name off the photographer masthead. That was John Steele's caption to Grant Ellis.
Death Weasel. That's his nickname, by the way.
So,
Did you know that?
No. John Steele's nickname. We'll get into that.
Death Weasel. I don't know why. I just know that's when I met him, that was.
So that was basically, it's an issue of kind of like John Steele is from Texas, Corpus Christi, I think, like, and he's documented the surfing there for 15 years.
John's a cool guy. Good guy.
And these tankers that come by and create these waves and. And he's been pitching that story to Surfer Magazine for 15 years, essentially. And they keep turning him down for these articles and turning down his images and not purchasing them. But then Surfer decided that they wanted to do an article on it. So they sent their staff guy, Grant Ellis, their photo editor, down there to cover it and do an article. And they did, and they published it. When that article came out is when John commented in this way. So it's kind of like the magazine can do whatever they want, but John cultivated this entire culture there, essentially did all the legwork, and then they come in and kind of usurp his knowledge and his gatekeeping is what it is.
What are your thoughts? My thoughts on that are that's unfortunate for John, because John certainly deserved to get that assignment based on what you've told me and what I know, because I used to work with both of those guys for 10 years at Server Magazine. And Grant Ellis is a good friend of mine, and John Steele, they're both good friends of mine. So I don't really know too much about it, which is what we do here on this podcast, is comment about stuff we don't know about. But my thoughts are, is that I do know that editors are under budgets, you know, and it could be a situation where he's like, you know, Grant could be like, you know what, we're under budget, I can't afford, I got to go do it myself because I get a salary here. So if I shoot it, it's covered,
right.
You know, I don't have to do a buyout to right. John. I don't have to pay for his T&E. I don't have to do any of that stuff. So it could have just been a simple budgetary thing and then a lack of communication on Grant's part, not calling John and going, dude, I'm so sorry. You should have this assignment, but I don't have any money. The budget's spent. I got to do it. Please forgive me, but I got to go down there and do it. That's, I'm assuming, where some of the issues are, and probably where a lot of the issues are with a lot of these things. And most conflicts in general, and just in public life, in life in general, is a lack of communication. So I'm hoping that's where it was, and it's too bad. But I do know John, you know, that he flipped off the magazine and asked for his name to be removed. That might have been, he may have tipped his hand too soon there.
I agree with that. And I almost, we got to use these names just to illustrate that's where it came from. But I really think we ought to remove, it's a bigger conversation than just these two guys, yeah. Especially with surfing, where it's like this kind of gatekeeping or this kind of developing your craft around an area or a certain knowledge and getting it out into the public eye and cultivating it, and then allowing other photographers just to show up and benefit off of all of your hard work, is something that comes up around the world with different locations and even with specific surfers. We've talked about Mini and the relationship that he's developed as a videographer with Dane Reynolds, and then other people show up and grab images of Dane and post it online, where he and Dane are working on this long-term project that they were, you know, and then they get in an argument, and it's kind of like, what's acceptable fair use and what isn't, I guess. And that's territory that we're kind of continually navigating. One of the issues that I've seen people run into is, as well as with social media reposting, like photographers that travel on the world tour post photos of these free surf sessions, and then you or whoever company repost a photo, and the photographer is like, well, I need to get paid for you guys reposting that photo on social media. How do you feel about that?
Well, gosh, I'll tell you one thing. It's from a global perspective, this story about photos and photographers and rights and surfing is so massive and so huge. And it goes back so far. There's just so many layers to the story, really, that need to be told, because you know, photographers feel like, and they probably have been, getting the short end of the stick since surf magazines first started.
100%.
You know, and I know that when I worked at Surfer Magazine, I was right in the middle of a lot of it, where, you know, they look at the editor and they're like, all you do is write down some words. You know, I got to go and grind and take the photos and develop it and pay.
And,
you know,
and the equipment's super expensive.
And just, you know, and so this story has just got so many different arms to it and branches that you could go off of, you know, but, and it's just quite interesting, the whole thing. And I've got side stories about John Steele that I could go into, and I should at some point, but, and they're not bad. They're more bad about me than they are about him. He and I went on a trip once, and I'll tell you the story in a minute, but the photography thing, it's just multi-layered, and I really don't know where to start. You know, if you had a more specific question for me, I will say you did ask me about social media.
That's kind of what I wanted to
do. And photography. And I kind of throw my hands up in the air and go, you know what? Social media is so quick and so happening. And so I just don't think it's possible to manage it. I don't think it's reasonable to expect management of your images.
I agree.
Like, if you put it out there, too bad. You might get one-time usage. a one-time payment, but it's off and running. There is no way you're going to be able to control Pierre in France and Felipe in Peru and me here and, you know, John Paul in Canada. It's just everybody is going to repost. And once it's in the digital realm, unfortunately, you're screwed. That's been the nature of surf photographers' lives. That's sort of their theme, is that they've been screwed and they're going to continue to get screwed. And it's a labor of love. It's not it's unfortunate, but
I also
it is what it is.
I feel like you should be grateful for the added exposure too.
Well, you're not getting credit for your photo.
But oftentimes they are.
Well,
like they get
different.
Tagged in the photo and they get the credit, but they still want to get their rate for whatever it is. No. But and I understand that too. Like I actually think that they're way underpaid and I kind of understand that whole aspect of it. And people are monetizing social media now and Instagram. So if somebody else is going to monetize it, I want to make sure that I'm benefiting from it if it's my imagery. But I also kind of feel like the opposite of that, where it's just like, dude, it's just social media and you should be grateful for any exposure that you get. You already posted it. And actually on Instagram's thing, it's like in their rights and usage, once you post it to Instagram, it's Instagram's property.
Right.
So you're no longer the owner of it at that point. So if I then post Instagram's property, that's between me and Instagram, not between you and me.
That's interesting.
Like that's legally the right answer.
Wow. But I also
think it goes back to that headspace thing that you talked about with competing, where whether you give 80% in a free surf or 100%, where it's kind of like if you're the photographer and you're wrapping up your headspace in chasing down nickels and dimes because somebody reposted your photo, it's kind of a poor use of your energy and time and a little bit of negativity too. Like be grateful somebody likes your work and posted it and work on, creating more work that is, and work on your clients who pay you and those types of projects. And once you kind of get paid for the projects, you're already in Australia shooting the photos for whomever you're there for, getting paid for that. Once those photos go out, if somebody reposts them, good. Added exposure, you already got paid for, you know, like that's kind of my mentality.
I agree. You know, it's like once you're out there, once you put it out there into the social media world, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and the super... The guys that are really holding on to some special stuff, and it's sad. Like I see photos of Jeff Devine's all the time without no one even mentioning Jeff Devine, you know?
Right.
Like, and I know that's a Jeff Devine photo just because I know his work because I own his book and we're pretty good buddies. And it's sad, you know, but I will say that there's guys like Jeff and there's guys even in this building, like Steve Wilkings has some great stuff that, I guess what I'm saying is it's the guys that have imagery from the magic era that when there wasn't like user-friendly SLR cameras, you had to be a legitimate professional trained photographer. And so all of those guys, they should be wise enough to kind of sit on their stuff and hold out on their stuff and do a book or whatever.
Like, sure.
Every time I see Jeff put an image out online, like one of his classic photos, I'm like, uh-oh, there it goes. You know, it's gone. Poof. Mm-hmm. It almost, the money from it just disappears. It's
right.
Like, and so those guys that have those moments, those eras, like the Leroy Granises, Steve Wilkings, Jeff Devine, even Hornbreaker and Art Brewer, there's a bunch of those guys, right? Those guys are sitting on some gold. Warren Bolster is a great example. Those guys are sitting on gold and they should do books. And so now guys like Sherman and guys that are, Sherman's got access to a lot of really cool stuff. And I know he's sitting on a book because he travels with Willie Nelson. He travels with Pearl Jam. He's got a real cultural book. He travels with Kelly Slate. Like he's got insight and access to all of these guys. So he's sitting. So those guys that are sitting on this stuff are there's certain guys that were probably close to Andy that just traveled with Andy, you know, Kenworthy was a guy that was real close with Andy. Those guys should sit on that stuff. Don't bleed it out to the social media realm or any digital realm and just make a really great book about it with insight and stuff like that. And there might be a little bit of money, maybe. You know what I mean? Like it's a tough job. There's a million surf photographers. It's the one thing that if you can't make the world tour, but you want to live that lifestyle, what can you do? I can be a surf photographer.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard. All I got to do is go to Best Buy and purchase that Canon that you have right there.
Yeah.
And start clicking away.
Yeah.
And you're a pro surf photographer. It's gotten that easy.
Yeah. I really sympathize, actually, even though I argued against the photographers. I kind of sympathize with them, and I really appreciate and admire the art, and I'm a huge fan. And I understand the plight of like being underpaid and all that sort of thing. But the only thing kind of more distasteful to me than that plight is seeing them spew the negativity of like, this is mine. I'm trying to protect it. Because I guess my underlying thought is just that like art should be appreciated and viewed. And I feel like if you're creating that art and then trying to create a box around it and charge people to see it, that's what rubs me the wrong way.
But the thing is that they've been screwed for so long.
I know.
That they're so salty because they have been really screwed over.
Right.
By magazine editors, by publishers, by the surf industry in general, like these corporations that just grab photos and, you know, just take advantage of photographers and I guess at the end of the day, they should have created some sort of union or some sort of monopoly of their skill set and said, you know what, we're all together on this. And if you want to use our images, this is how much it is. Because the imagery is what it's all about.
Absolutely. You know? 100%.
And they were getting paid nothing.
Here's what would be interesting. The comparison for us, we're giving this away for free. This content that costs us a lot of energy and time and even money, not a lot of money, but it costs us money to produce. What if I'm fully okay with other people posting this and sharing it, and the more ears, the better. But what if somebody took the file?
This segment's brought to you by the Boardroom Surfboard Show, by the way.
What if somebody took this file and instead of just posting it on their site, put in a bumper ad at the beginning and at the end of it, selling advertising and collecting that revenue from this show? And never told us about it. And then
that could be happening. And by the way, you just gave somebody a really good idea.
It could be, you know, and then one day somebody sends us a link and we go and listen to it. And it's like, hey, this is brought to you by whatever. And like, I'd be pretty pissed.
Yeah, I'd be pissed.
I'd be pissed.
But that's not happening on Instagram though. Like
you
are grabbing people's images, putting them on your site and you're getting ad revenue off of clicks or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that there's brands that have reposted photos.
I've seen stuff. Yeah. I've seen just recently. I remember seeing a Jeff Devine photo on I think it was surfertoday.com.
I don't know what that is.
It's just a website that conglomerates that gets news together and puts it all out there. And I remember going, God, they didn't even give Jeff a credit.
Oh,
a photo credit. You know, they just like put a photo.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, so that's...
It's touchy. I know we're going to get emails about this one.
It's so touchy. And again, there's so many elements to it that it would make a really good, you know, in-depth Surfer's Journal article about some of the infighting that's happened, some of the issues around it.
Right.
I'll tell you that in 99 or 2000, when the internet boom was happening, and there was Hard Cloud, and there was Swell, and there was... Blue Torch, and there was all of these new web surfing websites that were just being funded by VC guys and just had tons of money. And Steve Hawk came from Surfer Magazine and basically cherry picked Evan Slater and Doug Palladini and some photographers and just basically took them. And that was happening all over. Jim Kempton, I think, ran Hard Cloud, and whoever ran Blue Torch, I think it was Ian Cairns or so, I don't even know. But anyway, my point is that these big money VC websites came in and cherry picked all of the top editorial people from Surfer and surfing and just around the surf world. And we're giving the photographers like $5,000 monthly retainers. It was ridiculous. Like they were just throwing, by the way, we're going to buy out your photos too. You know, like we give you $5,000 and we're going to pay for your photos. So myself, as the Surfing Magazine website editor, I was left without anything. I had no budget, no money, and no photographers. They were looking at me and going, dude, Hard Cloud's giving me $5,000 a month. And and I'm like, dude, I can give you like $20 for this little, and I need a poster size, you know. And they were just laughing at me. So I had to become a surf photographer just out of need. Just go, screw it. I'm just going to go buy a camera, set up with my tripod right next to these guys, and just start taking pictures.
Right.
Because the technology was at a point now where I had autofocus, I knew enough about surfing that I knew what to shoot and what, but I was, they were still crappy photos relative to the good guys, but that's what I had to do. And that's what everybody did. Everyone all of a sudden became a professional surf photographer. When that first digital camera came out, I owned the very first one. I bought it from Pierre Tosti, who was the ASP photographer at the time. It was a $30,000 camera.
Whoa.
It was a Canon Kodak. It was called the Canon Kodak. I forget, like the G5000 or whatever the hell the name of it was. $30,000. Somehow I convinced somebody at Surfer Magazine, I think Kevin Meehan, the publisher at the time, to buy a used one from Pierre so Pierre could get the next updated, better one. And we're talking about, you know, I think there was like a 3 frames per second frame rate, and the largest file was like 4 megabytes. You know, there wasn't even like a raw file. It was like a large, it was just, it was like, it would be worth zero right now.
Right.
But just 15 years ago, it was like a $20,000 camera or something.
Crazy.
So we went out and bought that, and I just had to do that. And then I had photographers looking at me like, as soon as the internet bubble blew up,
right,
and they're like, oh, by the way, we need work. I'm like, that's cool. I'm good. You know, I know how to use this thing now.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of just a little sampling of some of the different ways that the surf photography world is, you know, skewed and gone awry and gone weird. And there's a million stories out there.
Interesting. Well, that'll be an ongoing conversation, I'm sure, that we have, because it's kind of changing on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, I'll tell you what, you sit in a boat at Chopu or at Cloudbreak with 15 photographers, or you got Sean Davey and Beelman and Sarge and Devine and Survey, and they're all, and all they do all day long is just share, swap stories about how they're getting screwed over by this publisher or that magazine. It's just, they are a salty crew, man.
Which is why I like to see guys like Chris Burkhardt, who we talked about last show and his TED Talk, guys like that, where it's like they kind of expand outside of what surf photographers are known for, you know, and start dabbling in other industries and that sort of thing, because you can get a $10,000 a day rate in the fashion world, you know, and that pays for so much more. Like, you'd have to work a long time in surfing to generate that.
There's a never ending supply of 20-year-old labor force of guys that just bought a new camera and want to cruise with their friends and would be stoked to submit something and get it published in Surfer. Oh, and you're going to give me $200. Cool.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Speaking of TED Talks and proprietary knowledge, I guess Chris Dixon did a TED Talk. And he did it. You were talking about his book, I think a show or two ago, Ghost Wave, about Cortez Bank.
Yeah.
And so Chris Dixon did a TED Talk that it's 15 minutes and it's all about that book. And it's not all about the full story within the book. It's kind of just the initial story that he talks about in the book, which is the discovery of Cortez Bank and fishermen going out there, and they were going to build an island that they were going to have a resort on and all this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So Dixon looks super nervous in the talk, and he actually doesn't nail it at all, but it's still worth watching. And like he got his point across, you know?
Yeah.
So
I saw some Facebook stuff that he put out there that he was really nervous about it.
Oh, did he say that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's
even said that he blew it.
He kind of did.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. That was my own assessment. But at the beginning of the talk, I'm like, whoa, he's super nervous, but I'm sure he'll get through it. By the end, he was just as nervous as he was at the beginning.
I'm sure it's nerve-wracking.
It's well worth watching, though. Like, it's a great
story. Book. It's a great book. You should read the book, because it's a fascinating little piece of land out there. You know, Bishop's Rock and the Cortez Bank. And it's a great book.
Yep.
Ghost Wave.
Awesome.
Dixie.
Well, I got wrap-up topics like Kook and Duke, but if you have anything else.
I've got a few more things. There was another Reunion Island shark attack just a couple days ago. A 47-year-old surfer, Eddie Chasselet, was surfing a spot there in Reunion on the West Coast. His arm got massively slammed and hammered by probably a bull shark or a tiger. Despite the severity of his arm injuries, they didn't have to amputate his arm, mainly due to the first aid by the firemen who were quick on the scene, and later the doctors there that fixed it up quickly and did a good job. But Eddie's a well-respected surfer on Reunion. And this is the third shark attack there. As you know, tragically, that 13-year-old red-hot surfer kid, Elio Canestri, in April, and the 20-year-old woman died who was just swimming out there, believe it or not.
That was a poor choice.
Sadly, yeah. And so there was some commentary about this, and basically you know, there are shark nets in Durban, South Africa. The idea is, you know, shark nets, you would think, right, that shark nets are just this one big long net and
right.
the sharks bump into them and turn around and go. But they're actually gill nets that are set up to not only catch the shark, but have the shark flounder there and die. And then they pull the sharks out. And that's how they call the population of the sharks in Durban.
Okay.
They actually kill them through this netting process.
Okay.
And I guess my question to you is, is there a point in time, are you at a place where you're like, no matter what, we should never cull a regional shark population? Or are you at a place, David, where you're like, there could be a point in time when enough people get killed that I'm willing to entertain the possibility of culling the local shark population?
I absolutely am at a point where it's okay to cull a population. And I wouldn't dictate it based on how many people get killed, but I would dictate it based on, look, we're not living in a natural ecosystem any longer. There's overfishing and those sharks get hungry because there's not enough fish for them to eat and they go kill humans. And like, if we're altering the ecosystem in one way by overfishing, then there's going to be negative consequences and you're going to have to either stop fishing or cull the shark population. Like, there's consequence to your action. And so we need to adjust for our initial behavior that set a consequence into motion. That's my stance.
Well, interestingly, there were a couple, you know, the shark attacks at Reunion have been every year for years and years. There's been really a bunch, you know, a series, a run of sad incidents there. A couple of years ago, Stab Magazine did a piece on Reunion Island and how screwed up it is. Interestingly enough, they say a lack of fishing is the cause of the problem.
It attracts sharks.
It's suspected that the increase in shark activity on Reunion is a direct result of the natural reserve in place on the West Coast, where it's illegal to fish, spearfish, or ride a jet ski. It's believed that the sharks are coming in closer because there's plentiful fish. There's also the fish farming on the West Coast, which some experts think might be attracting more of the predators.
Hmm.
So you would think, you know, you're right. Are we messing with the ecosystem? Sure. But it goes both ways, I guess.
Right.
Fishing and lack of fishing.
Right. Interesting.
I'm just seeing here, breaking news here on the show. Quicksilver stock took a massive hit this morning. It's down almost 40%.
What?
Yeah. It's at 77 cents. It went from $1.24. And I guess they released their earnings and it just went bang, and it's way down.
I might buy.
So you either buy
or run for the hills.
Run for the hills.
I noticed Billabong too is down to like 40 cents this morning.
40 cents?
Yeah.
On the Australian stock market.
No. Let me.
I think that's an Australian stock, Billabong. I'm not sure though.
I bought it at like 55 cents.
Oh, you're kidding, really? No. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, look, 44 right now, flat from yesterday.
I think. I don't know when it was. I want to say like 2009 or something. Whenever it was that their stock took a hit. I mean, it's taken a beating for years
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There was one time when it was, if you bought at like $1.10, it did get up to like $3 or something.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it was like at 13 at some point.
Yeah, it would have been if you bought the today at 77, what number would you sell at?
Oh, man, I don't know.
$1.50. Double your money and get out.
Yeah. That'd be fair.
I think that's about right.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you got nothing to lose also at 70 cents. So yeah. I wouldn't mind waiting just to see if it ever made its way up to $10 in 20 years from now. You know, that'd be worth it. But I heard that Gordon Merchant bought back a bunch of shares in Billabong like just a couple weeks ago, like $2 million bucks worth or something.
I like that.
So yeah.
That's
so I think
sign.
That's a good sign. Yeah. But it's at 44 cents. So whatevs.
Well, some more... industry parking lot rumor/gossip. I heard that Google is going to build that Kelly Slater wave pool, the deluxe model.
Google.
Yeah. That's the rumor floating around. That Google's involved with Kelly Slater's wave pool.
That's huge.
It's going to be, and it's not just the small little, it's going to be the deluxe model.
Wow.
Again, rumor, innuendo.
Is there a location or anything?
That's all I've heard.
Okay.
That's all I've heard. It could be total BS. It could be BS, but I heard it from an industry insider, so that must come from some relevant source.
If anybody could do it,
Google,
man.
Google boats out there in Fiji, you know.
No, I didn't.
Now, one of the massive boats that's out there at Cloudbreak is is the quote unquote, they're calling it the Google boat.
Why?
Because I think all the Google executives are on it.
They want to watch the Fiji Pro?
Yeah, they're on vacation in Fiji like Dane Reynolds. They're partying with Dane and Adriano. They're pulling skulls of that, whatever that Momotu drink is.
Wow. I'm impressed. Speaking of handlers for professional surfers and how they should cultivate their client's image, Blair Marlin is Dane's, you know, manager.
Yeah.
And Blair is in Fiji with Dane. And he posted an Instagram yesterday of them on this little... like kind of catamaran type thing.
I saw that.
Did you? And Dane falls off the back of it. Like they don't even know what they're doing. And I don't know if they were drunk at this exact moment, but it's like their first time sailing this thing together and Dane gets bucked off the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of fits with what you're saying of just like, if you guys are partying that hard, should you be posting this?
Yeah.
And you're the manager, by the way. So, yeah. But whatevs.
That whole thing could be a sinking ship in more than one way.
Must-see moment?
Yeah, I have a must-see moment. By the way, this week's must-see moment is brought to you by the 100 Wave Challenge.
Is it?
It's a Boys to Men mentoring program fundraiser.
Excellent.
And for more information, visit 100wave.org. No, I just bring that up because we might as well start. I just winged it right there. They don't even know I did that.
Sweet.
But my point is that... some of these segments, if we're going to monetize the show,
yeah,
we need to start putting it out there that these segments are available to monetize.
Awesome. I'm in.
My must-see moment presented by the 100 Wave Challenge is Sarge's video scrapbook. Early 90s video you can find on YouTube from Paul Sargeant, Sarge, Australian photographer. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Early 90s footage with... it's pretty interesting because it's got Gerlach and Hoyo and a very young Kelly Slater. Todd Prestige, Tony Ray, Barton Lynch, Ross Clark Jones, Tom Carroll. That whole crew of early 90s guys. Late 80s, actually. Early 90s. And they're riding longer boards. And it's basically an hour-long video of the year in review that Sarge put together. And so it's got interviews of, you know, it's got Brad Gerlach doing crazy shit. It's got full parties in Hossiger and Baritz where they're just at the nightclub and they're raging, you know, like they're making Dane Reynolds look like an old man.
Right.
When it comes to partying.
What's it called?
Sarge's video scrapbook. You can search YouTube for it. I'll have it on downthelineradio.com. I'm sure David will put it on surfsplendorpodcast.com.
Good pull, dude. I'm super interested
Sarge's
in seeing
video
that.
Scrapbook. It's got interviews with Shmoo, and there's a bunch of them, you know?
Sweet. Well, my must-see moment hit the internet 9 days ago. It seems like an eternity ago, but we haven't talked about it on this show because our last show was 14 days ago.
Dane Reynolds
uh-huh. sampler.
I've heard it's good.
You haven't watched it?
No.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I know.
So Dane Reynolds sampler. The thing is legit. Most people on listening probably have watched it. But the point that I'm going to bring up about it, maybe not everybody saw, which was Stab Magazine posted it and they had about a 3-paragraph essay from Dane that he sent them with the video talking about the experience of the video. We all know Dane rose to popularity.
I did watch some of this, actually.
Go ahead. We all know Dane rose to popularity through MarineLayerProductions.com, MarineLayer.com, where he made all these lo-fi videos that they just were revolutionary, best surfing on the internet for a number of years, and then has since not really updated Marine Layer for the past year or so. He's also fallen out of the contest scene. So it's like, what's Dane doing now? We loved him so much. Well, he addresses some of that stuff in this essay. And this video sampler is all the B clips that didn't make the cut for Kai Neville's cluster. So in the opening paragraph of this essay, he talks about sending a text message to one of his friends with a link to this video when it was private. It wasn't public yet. And he goes, hey, check out this video. What do you think? Should I post it? And his friend's response was like, yeah, it's okay. And Dane's like, what are you talking about? It's okay. And his friend's like, dude, I have such high expectations for you. And this isn't better than what you've put out in the past. So I'm not sure that you should put it out in the public's eye. We haven't seen anything from you for a while. Don't put it out unless it's A+. So Dane's next paragraph says, quote, man, Expectations. What a stoke killer. Every time you do something, the expectation is that whatever you do next has to be better. Do you understand how unsustainable that is? The pressure caused by this principle has stressed me out, burned me out, and I eventually cracked, hit out, dropped out, turned away. But then you get to a point where you're just like, F it. That's what I've done. That's when I've done my best surfing. When there is complete absence of consideration for what other people expect. He said, so yeah, this clip, it's B-sidey, but that's not a disclaimer. I'm proud of it. Every moment can't be your best. The waves aren't always perfect. The more you expect, the more you're disappointed. Do what you can do with what you got. Surfing's an art. There's no winner. There's no loser. There's no right or wrong way to do it. There's a big difference between saying F it and genuinely feeling it. And that's where Dane's at this moment.
What are the name of the two photographers, the video guys that were in a scuffle over Dane footage? Minnie and who's the other guy?
Norwell is his Instagram name.
Norwell and Minnie. Have you seen the videos that one of them is putting out? Norwell's putting out and it's all Dane falling.
Yep.
Those are epic. And it's just like, and it says something like, this is because Minnie Blanchard's an asshole or something like that on the title. And there's just clip after clip of just horrible footage.
Yeah.
All the outtakes of Dane falling at like Ventura Harbor and stuff.
Yep. Hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
Solid response, by the way, to being told to beat it by Minnie.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that out of Dane, you know, because it is exactly what we've been speculating about. And it's true. And that's so I was glad to see him come out and say it. And to be honest,
letting go. It was his letting go moment.
Exactly. It relates exactly to that. And I think that.
Should I put him on my fantasy team?
Well, that.
You just convinced me.
That's a different question. No, and I kidding. Don't think you should.
I know.
I would advise against it. But this video, it is his B-sides from Cluster. But I would argue it's more entertaining to watch than anything in Cluster. Like, cool. It's spectacularly good. And it's the same style of all of his lo-fi marine layer edits. Interesting music. Mediocre waves, couple of falls, but brilliant surfing.
I've got a new board coming out, new board coming from Biolas, a little step up, like a Shane Beshen step up. I think it's 6'2". It's a quad round tail.
Okay.
That I'm really looking forward to. I have a new board coming from Pizel. John made me a Pizelian, and it's 5'11", and it's thinner than any board I've ever owned. Hmm. But he promises that it's got plenty of volume.
Dude, you are the new board king.
Well, no, I just, you know, I'm going on a surf trip, so I ordered a couple boards.
When throughout the year we have this show and you're not going on surf trips, you're still at like two new boards a month, it seems. I hope your wife doesn't listen to this.
Oh, no. And then I'm reading a book right now on, and I just started it, but it's a journey to the Arctic in like 1878 or something like that. And it's the first journey where they, instead of going up through Greenland, they went around through the Bering Strait up through Alaska. And that's the book I'm reading.
Very cool. Yeah. Duke and Coop?
Don't have either.
Okay.
I'm sort of, I was telling my wife, I sort of have a problem calling people out as kook. It doesn't mean people don't deserve it at times. And I just don't want to have to come up with one. You know what I mean? If there's an obvious one, I'll come up with it.
Yeah.
But
getting soft in your old age, man.
I am.
You created this concept. This is your child.
But I don't want to just like search and like I could have, you know, there's a couple of places I could have went, but it also like what you talked about a couple episodes ago, it kind of crosses the line into, is it really any of my business?
And right.
Oh, by the way, those who throw, you know, stones from glass houses.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I'm just more, maybe it's all the yoga I'm doing, but I want to be more uplifting than like calling people. It's just like, that's the easy out. Everybody calls people out. Like there's the kook of the day Instagram, which is actually really funny.
It's brilliant.
And they don't really call people out per se individually. They just take pictures of freaky dudes, but
wearing wetsuits at lunch and stuff.
But see, that's my whole thing. I was telling my wife, what's wrong with wearing a wetsuit at lunch?
It's a kook move, dude. Come
on. But why? Like, but that's your insecurity. They're stoked with it. Like, they're okay.
It's not my insecurity. It's that. Why? That's the most uncomfortable. It's the most uncomfortable thing you could possibly wear to lunch. The only reason you're doing it is to let everybody know.
It's the most uncomfortable thing you could wear to lunch.
No, anybody could. That's objective.
Why do they want to be uncomfortable?
Because they want to look like a surfer. They want everybody in there to know that they just went surfing. That's why.
That's a kook move. That's their motive.
Dude, it could be. There's no other explanation. That thing will rash you up.
They could just be stupid.
Which also a kook move. You know it's a kook move. Come on.
I mean, I would never do it because you're right. It's like, I'd rather be comfortable, but.
Okay, so I get your point.
Right.
Here's this, how about this for a kook move? This is undeniable. I'm at the beach the other day on the weekend. It's getting crowded because of course it's June, summertime. All of a sudden the beaches are five times more packed than they normally are when we go surfing. And I went on the weekend. But this family is walking across walking down the sidewalk after coming out of a liquor store. And mom, dad, three or four little kids. One of the kids was probably 6 years old. He has a ice cream that he just got in the liquor store. Peels the wrapper off, throws the wrapper down on the ground to his side and just starts eating the ice cream. And I'm just like, what? Who throws the wrapper onto the sidewalk? Like, where are you people from, you animals? And so I grabbed the wrapper and just handed it back to him. I was like, hey, here you go, you dropped this. And then the dad hadn't seen the kid throw the wrapper, but the dad was five paces ahead. And then when I handed it back to the kid, he saw me do that and just kind of like wasn't sure how to assess the situation. He didn't say anything to me. And I was just like, oh, you know, I don't think I even said your kid dropped it. I just kind of like motioned. And I've done that before in the past too. But it's like, you're an animal. You're raising your kids this way to just peel the wrapper off an ice cream at the beach and discard it.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
disgusting.
Huntington Beach, dude.
It is Huntington Beach.
That's Corona right there. Corona by the sea.
It's disgusting.
909.
That's my kook of the week for sure.
That sucks.
My Duke, Seth Moniz, not Carlos Muniz.
Yeah, Seth.
Seth Moniz.
Son of Tony.
Yes. Full family.
Yeah.
This kid did a monster air rotation. Did you see this on his Instagram? I didn't think he did. And that's why he's my Duke, is this thing flew under the radar. It hit a week and a half ago and nobody's talked about it. It's gnarly. It's like a full air 360 rotation, like a standard rotation. Nothing out of the ordinary in terms of rotation, but he over rotates the thing into like a proper spin and a half. And it's massive and it's legit. It's on the South Shore of Oahu. So I'll post his Instagram. I'll embed it on surfsplendorpodcast.com. But
Seth Moniz is one of those guys. You know, I always downplay these new young up and coming kids, right? But we heard Peter Townend here when we interviewed him a couple episodes ago say that if there is a Hawaiian kid that could get on tour and be a force and be a world champion, because it's hard to come from Hawaii and be a world champion.
Yep.
A number of factors working against you. It could be Seth Moniz.
I agree. The whole clan is rock solid.
The family's rock solid.
Yeah. So, and that helps having that family.
It's crucial.
Last thought. How's your 21-day yoga program going?
It's going good. Tomorrow will be 21 days.
Wednesday. You missed a day?
I did miss Saturday.
Okay.
I was in a golf tournament Saturday, which I won, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Not me. Me and my partner.
Your team. Well, good. So how's the yoga thing going? You're psyched?
I'm psyched. I got to do two sessions either today or tomorrow to make it 21 in 21 days.
Are you feeling
I feel great.
Stronger, better?
Yes. I feel strong. I feel ready to go. I feel
clarity of mind.
Yeah, I just feel really good about everything, just about my nutrition. It just kind of brings everything into perspective about what I'm taking into my body. It just puts me in a good place.
It does require you to eat more
healthy
and just be more aware.
It makes you want to eat more healthy. I'm noticing that I'm just like, nah, you know what? I'm not going there.
If you try to go to a hot yoga class after eating a burrito for breakfast, it's a nightmare.
You can pass out.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Yeah. So you have to be cognizant.
Yeah. I'm a big fan.
Good.
Yoga Tropics in downtown Encinitas and also Yoga 6. The studio in Carlsbad. That's where my wife and I have been going.
Sweet.
By the way, I got an email from a listener, and I want to say he's in Philadelphia, or anyway, somewhere back east. And I apologize. His name is Michael Weinstein. I might have got his name wrong too. but my point is that he sent me a thing. He's like, hey, I'm coming to Encinitas with my wife. I'm coming to San Diego. What are some things I should do? So I'm like, hey, man, you should do this, go check out this, go there, and call me and we'll go have a cup of coffee. You know, I'd like to meet you.
Wow.
So hopefully he's going to come out this winter and Mike and I know his name's Mike. Mike and I will hook up and it'll be fun to meet a listener from somewhere else and hang out and just kind of get to know him.
I got an email saying that you need to stop pounding on the desk when you're emphasizing your points.
Yeah. Did you really?
I swear. I was going to give you this little padding to like use that.
I've heard all sorts of stuff. Like I do this too much.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That is super annoying.
Yeah, I've
heard. I haven't noticed you, but when I listen to other podcasts, I'll hear people doing that.
Yeah.
So at any rate.
Yeah. All right.
Keep those emails coming.
Yeah. Look, we want to thank you all for listening. We do need to monetize the show. I got another email from a guy who said, hey, there's a way you can do it through Amazon that other podcasts do. Oh, yeah. I think Corolla does it.
Yeah. You click through, like we could embed an Amazon banner on our sites. And when they click through from our site and make a purchase on Amazon, we just get a percentage of that sale.
Oh, it's an affiliate deal.
Affiliate. Yeah, exactly.
We should look into that. You and I need to have a powwow to figure out how to monetize.
I think we're ready. We're kind of there.
I do too. Look, until next time, adios and aloha.
Right on. Thank you again for tuning in. Thanks, Scott, for helping host the show. And if you'd like to see all of the things that we discussed, the Dukes, the Kooks, the must-see moments, it's all on our website, as always, surfsplendorpodcast.com. And all of our back episodes are located there as well. In your podcast app on your phone, almost, I think, pretty much no matter which one you use, they only archive the past 50 episodes, but we're coming up on 100 episodes, so there's twice as many as that available. And you can find all of that on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. Everything is archived for free, completely free. So definitely check that out. All that we ask of you is just that you share this show with friends. We're happy to produce the content, but the more people that are listening, you know, the more interesting guests and big name guests that we can attract. So this is an episode of Surf News, but we do these every 2 weeks, and then on the alternating weeks, we do profile pieces. So we had a piece with surfboard shaper Roger Hines last week, and then Randy Rarick prior to that. So check that out. Tons and tons of content on our website. And if you feel a need to continue this conversation, you can also do it there in the comments section for each show or on social media at Surf Splendor. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that jazz. All right, that is it for this week of Surf Splendor. We will be back next week with an all-new episode. And until then, this is your host, David Scales, signing off and reminding you to shred on. Yeah, and make me wanna holler and throw up both my head. Oh, crime is increasing. Trigger happy, police.